Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about addiction. Yes, that word that so many people say, I'm done with it, I don't know anything about it, I'm deep into it. It's taken my life away, and it's crushed our lives, our souls, and our spirits. I think almost everybody that listens to this show may have someone in your family that is struggling with this, that you have family members, friends, associates. It really doesn't matter. I think that addiction is really something that is going on in the world today, and it's saying, that we have some issues. We need to look at them. Today, we're specifically going to be talking about drug addiction. My guest today is Kay Genovese. Her book is Hat Tricks from Heaven, the story of an athlete in his own prison of addiction, which is a story of her son, Gino. Kay, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, so nice to be here to talk.
So, Kay, don't you think, almost everybody's been touched by this. It's just which story, we want to talk about or focus on, and see how many we can always talk about to get out the message, right?
Oh, exactly. I mean, that's why I wrote this book. After Gino died, I realized I just could not sit around, So I was mourning, of course, and so much grief, and I was going to a grief group for my healing process. And other support groups that I attend, like Al-Anon, which is a family support group for people that have addicts and their families or friends. So during that time, I really decided I wanted to write a book because Gino, before he did die accidentally of a heroin and fentanyl overdose, he told me, he said, I think I really am going to write a book because he was a good writer. And tell my story. And so I feel like for his spirit and his and the goodness of his soul, I wanted to write something about what happened in his life.
Right.
And
I think it's about celebrating their life all the time. We get so stuck, I think, sometimes in our grief that we want to change the story or we want to create a different story when really we want to share their story as best we possibly can, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, that was what I was trying to do. Each passage of his life bringing him up really was a joy. We had so much fun with him through the years. He was a hockey player, and how it started was he got accepted to a private high school, and he played hockey and football, and he had three injuries in high school for his knees and his shoulder, and then three more in college playing hockey. So he got addicted to the OxyContin that they were giving him. And, the story just goes on from there. We really, because he was at a boarding school and in college, we didn't see him like he was living here. So, he graduated from Assumption College in Worcester, Massachusetts, and he got a very good job in sales. And he had a company car and the whole bit. And unfortunately, he decided to move in with his girlfriend, Heather, but the only apartment they could find was an apartment above a bar. And Heather did not want to live above a bar, but Gino needed a place to live, so he said, "You stay with your mom. I'm going to live here, and then we'll figure it out." So that's what happened to bring him back, I believe, to addiction, because there was a lot of selling of drugs in that bar.
Right.
And I think that's what started him up again. So,
you know, I think, let's go back to the beginning for a second. I think, you know, really, the way so many people say, what is the gateway drug? And I think when they say they want to find out what the gateway drug is so they could turn around and be so angry and so violent and to be able to push blame on that very first drug, when really it's really what you're sharing, and I've shared many times of several of our family members with the same issue, is the idea that it's a process. Do you know what I mean? In other words, we can't always go back to the first one and command and demand and you're going to repent, because, you know, life kept going on. And I think it's very difficult to tell the story. It's very difficult to see it play out. And we always wish we could change it, where we want to have revenge on people, but that really doesn't, that really doesn't solve anything, does it?
No, it doesn't at all. It just makes you more angry, I believe.
Yeah.
But, you know, I grasped the fact that this was a disease, you know, and he couldn't
mm-hmm.
help himself. And especially with, I don't know how it is where you are, but there's a lot of fentanyl, which is a horrible drug that's
mm-hmm.
mixed in with the heroin, and kids are dying left and right. You know, it's
right.
not even, it's like a plague. It's horrible. So
yeah,
I just feel so sad about my son, but I want to pass the message on to parents and other kids about this book. You know, have parental
yeah.
awareness and have, you know, like high school kids read it. I had one lady called me and told me she read the book, but she read it with her family. She has
mm-hmm.
two teenage kids, and the whole family read it together. And, you know, they discussed it and dissected it, and, you know, the kids really listened. You know, they heard it. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, hopefully that will help. You know, the
yeah,
idea
I think,
to help.
Don't you think the idea really about of us sharing about it in the first place is really about saying these things are out there and to be aware? I think awareness has been our blind side. If you look back, I mean, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Alcohol was the big thing then. And I think when all these drugs came along, many people in the 90s and 2000s, they kind of were blindsided by it. They said, oh, that's not really, oh, it's not my kid, it's not the good kid, it's not the bad kid, whatever. And kind of it was almost like I almost call it, instead of a gateway drug, I call it a sleeper drug. Because what happened is it just came in when we weren't noticing, you know. All of a sudden it showed up, and they were already so engaged in the process and availability that we were almost working, trying to abate the situation, don't you think?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I was blindsided by this with,
mm-hmm.
You know, the fentanyl. I didn't even hear of it until he had been arrested, and then they put him
mm-hmm.
on house arrest, and I had to take him up to the sheriff's department, where he had to go every single day and give a urine and stay for classes. But
uh-huh.
there was some really advanced drug addicts there, and I don't mean that to criticize them, because it is a disease,
mm-hmm.
but they were much farther in their disease and didn't really want the help. They had to go there. And, you know, I thought there was hope for Gino, because he was a smart kid. He had I thought he'd get his wits about him, and he had this
right.
beautiful, wonderful life and a beautiful girlfriend that wanted to help him and get married and, you know, carry on. But Heather couldn't do that, and I don't blame her. She tried.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so he got introduced to the fentanyl there. And
right.
he tried it, and he just got hooked like anything. Nothing else mattered but that. And it was very, very sad, you know, to see him, his personality change so drastically. And the thing with fentanyl, it wears off quickly, so you want to have another hit of it, you know, and that's what kills them. That's what kills them, because they give fentanyl in the operating room. So in the operating room, that's one of the drugs they use. So it is very potent, very powerful, and deadly for these kids on the street. And, yeah,
it's very sad. I think a lot of times kids and I think almost, I'm not even going to use the word kids. I'm going to say that almost everybody has had some points before the age of 21 in which they were introduced to trauma, to pain, be it physical or psychological. So I think if we look at it and we say, do they learn how to medicate in any form, whatever that might be, perhaps that is where their soul path started. You know what I mean? In other words, almost everybody's had a hit of some sort. It's just we don't always know it. It doesn't always show up. And how it progresses is what plays out as what happens in your 20s and 30s, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Because Gino had the trauma of the sexual abuse when he was a child. And he had blocked it, and we finally found out about it because he was playing football in high school, and the coach said to me, sometimes Gino just stands in the middle of the field when he's supposed to be catching the ball, he spaces out, and he kept doing things like that. And then he wrote a paper for his English class, and the teacher called me and was very concerned because the content of it was they could write any story. So he told them it was fictional, and he said this family had three kids and they were sexually abused, and as he was, so he found the perpetrator and shot him. He shot him three times, one for his sister, one for his brother, and one for himself. So that was very powerful. So the teacher called me and said, I don't know if any of this is true, but, this concerns me. So we discussed it. My husband and I discussed it with Gino, and we finally got it out of him that he was having flashbacks of the abuse.
Right.
And the other two people were two other members of the family. So it was a true story, actually, except for the shooting. No shooting.
Right.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
Well, you know, don't you think that if we look back, I'm in my 60s now, and I'm sure you're around the age. And if we look back at our parents and grandparents, there was quite a bit of that undercover going on. In all those decades before. So I think that to turn around and say it's horrendous in society right now, I think really what we should say is potentially – is that all of that abuse that's been going on in the past is now starting to come out. In other words, it's coming out in people's actions. It's coming out in their stories that like Gina was written. It's coming out in needing help. It's coming out in people. And I think that almost it's as if these children that are now, you know, around Gino's age group when he had died is also, too, of the time where it's gotten to the point where we can't take it anymore. In other words, don't you see what you're doing to the world and the people around you, and it's time you change. It's just how we got the message might have been not the best delivery system.
Right.
Do you think?
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I have the same feeling. It's just what to do about it. I mean,
correct.
Know, it's happening. What can we do as a society? You know, we all got to, you know, that statement, it takes the village. I mean, it really does because, you know, Gino would listen to other people other than me, like my girlfriend.
Right.
You know, when I had to make Gino leave one time because he was just too high, and I just couldn't stand it. And so my friend Diane said, of course you can come, but if you use drugs, you're back out on the street. So he stayed sober for her, but not for us. You know,
isn't it tough to be a mother?
Yeah, you know, I have three, and sometimes I think, geez, you know. I had a statement. I remember my aunt was saying she had trouble with her kid, one of her kids, and one of her friends was adopting. This was ages ago, but she said, oh, my God, why would you adopt after what I have been through with this child? Like,
right.
You know, there's other things other than being a parent. Not that I regret being a mother. I love it, and I've had a wonderful years with all of my kids, but yeah, this blindsided me, and it shouldn't have, because he had overdosed three other times and had somebody had Narcan on him and brought him back. So you know, I was in denial. Like, I just said, he's gonna get better, he's too smart to do this, and that wasn't it at all. You know, he just had the disease that he couldn't control.
And also, too, though, you were doing the best you could. And also, too, I think I hardly encourage everyone, clients, patients, people, family, friends, and also our listeners, is to still consider to say, they're going to make it, they're going to make it. Because when you keep putting it out there, you're giving the best that you can. And you say your prayers and you believe in God and you believe in the good in everyone and hoping that something will shift that day, you know? And some make it and some don't. You know, I know with my own family member, it was like, my God, I can remember laying on the floor wailing like nobody's business because of the pain I felt, because I'm an empath, and I was feeling the tremendous amount of pain of this situation. And it was just, it was like I just had to keep believing that God somehow, some way, was going to be okay, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah, being an empath is a tough job. I know it. I've had two other nephews die of the same disease. 10 years ago, my nephew Casey died of a heroin overdose, and 3 weeks later, another nephew died. I have a big family. But, you know, all of us are just feeling like the boys, my nephews, it's
right.
The boys that are mainly doing this. I think, you know, there's 18 cousins, so I think that, you know, alcohol is big for some of them, and some of them are totally fine. But
right.
Who decides what they want to do? I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. I just never thought it would happen to Gino. I don't know why. I had to go through this with my son Dan with alcohol, and I just didn't think God would do this to me again.
Right.
But it's not about that, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing's a coincidence, I don't think. And My son Danny is sober now for 20 years. He just grasped AA and been going. So he, you know, he doesn't even think of drinking now. That would be foreign to him, but not when he was, you know, 13. You know, it was horrible. Mm-hmm. So it was harder because I was 20 years older, and here I have Gino acting out and getting in trouble and going to jail. And the thing was, a lot of times he broke probation and would get in trouble. Like he didn't have a license and they caught him driving a car. So he didn't have a license, so that was a violation of probation. So they just said, pay a fine, $300.
Right.
Any time pay a fine other than looking at the real problem. Like this kid needs help and doing something about it, because every time we mentioned a rehab to him or he needed a detox, he was out the door. He was gone. He didn't want anything to do with it. He could do it himself, he kept saying. I can do it myself. So that's where the system comes in. You know, they have a responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's not all about money. You know, we need more detoxes. We need more sober houses in Massachusetts. We have a governor, Baker, that is very on top of this, and he's trying to get 5 new sober homes in the Boston area and beyond. So hopefully that will happen. And I'm active with Mass Organization of Addiction Recovery, and so they do a lot of this work. They try to raise money for different things. So I couldn't help my son, but I can help other people, hopefully.
You know, with the other family members and associates that I've had, is that many times they have been in multiple rehabs, 10, 15, 20 times. And people would say, well, why bother? Or, oh, it's not going to work. And the answer is, almost it has to become their lifestyle, where they need to be able to say, hey, I need a refresher. Hey, I need to go back. Hey, I need to go visit somebody. And to always be able to retreat into that space of safety in a rehab, if that's what they need. I think the idea that you're going to go once and it's going to fix you is a really huge fallacy that people kind of get hit over the head with, and they expect it to fix someone, and it just doesn't.
I know it. I know. A lot of times it takes several times for them to get it. My girlfriend spent $40,000 on her son at a place in, you know, those New Age places where they have yoga.
Right.
And no 12-step programs. And so she spent $40,000 for a month on him. And he came home, and he stayed sober for 6 weeks, and that was it. You know, it just takes so much more than that, you know.
Yeah.
I just think it takes maybe a year away from everybody that you know at some place not in your same area.
It, what it almost takes is a change of society. Right now, I think society is at the point of still wagging fingers at either the doctors or this, that, or the other, you know. If they just took it and maybe a step further and said, you know, I mean, I live in the New Orleans area. Why does liquor have to be, as soon as you walk into the CVS store, who CVS has turned around and said they were going to take out all the tobacco and candy out of the front? Why are they not taking the alcohol out? When you walk in the front door, there's 10 lanes of alcohol, you know? And I think, right, and I think the idea that, you know, you can buy a pint at the gas station, which was a real problem, and, you know, you can walk around with open cups all the time, just put a little plastic top on you and you're good to go. So I think the idea that society needs to change. And every time I say this on the show, I always get a lot of comments from people saying, well, it's all about free will and blah, blah, blah. And it's sort of like, well, you know, just let me know when it hits your house and let me know about your free will answer. You know, do they need to always have a bar on every single corner? Do they need to always have it at the grocery store? Do they need to always have it here, there, and everywhere? Or if your child gets hurt and they're sent to a physician, be it a school physician or your own private one, do we always need to turn around and always use pain meds right at the get-go if the child is under 18? And, hey, the parents don't even know, have to know half the time because they consider them of age to be able to, I think it's if you're over 16 now, that the children don't even have to tell you. And it's like, what the heck? You know, where are we really going?
That's crazy. That, you know, it's good to get, I mean, if your kid has a problem under here at 17, if you get them before that age and you have some control, there's a little bit of control over them. You can make them do things. In my situation, that happened. But, one time, Gino, after he had shoulder surgery, and he was away from school on school break when he had the surgery, and then it had been a month, so I was taking him back to school, and he said, could you stop the doctors, and I need another prescription. And I said, Gino, you've taken this Percocet now for a month. You need to cut down. I said, you need to get off it. And he was so manipulative, which is part of the disease, and he just nagged the heck out of me that I finally gave in. I knew the doctor. I had worked with him. He was a great surgeon. But I said to him, you know, he's been on this a month. I think he should just be off it. He shouldn't be taking it anymore. Addiction runs in my family. And he looked at me, and he had this look on him like, you are a helicopter mother. He said, your son is not an addict. His shoulder is sore. He needs it. And with that, he wrote out a script for 60 Oxycontins that he had been taking. So we got it filled. And what I did is I took it away from him, and I gave it to the school nurse to administer it to him. And that's when I knew there was an issue. That's when I realized, he got a problem. Because he looked at me and he said, I want to be in control of my drugs. Of course he did, because he wanted to take them as he needed them, not as ordered. You know, he probably immediately would take 5 of them. You know, he had no filter. Yeah, he had no filter. So things like that happen, little things and big things. I finally realized this is horrible when his friend from a roommate from college called us up and told us, your son is in really bad shape. He's sitting in the bar. He had just no money, nothing. His brother had lent him money and because he lives out of the country. And so he sent Gino some money because they were going to try to buy a house, you know, like make a profit, flip it. He sent him quite a bit of money, and Gino used it all on drugs. And then he felt so bad, he went and gambled to try to make the money back and lost even more. So it became a cycle of craziness. So we said, you know, pack your things, you're coming home, and we're going to figure this out. So one thing he always did, even through his addiction, was work. He always seemed, he got fired from his job, but he wanted to work. He was a worker. I mean, he did, you know, Christmas trees at Christmas time, cutting them down. Mm-hmm. He did worked in a supermarket. He had all these odd jobs and just kept busy. But he ended up using the money for drugs.
It's interesting. When we talk about, let's talk for a second about colleges and about schools. When a son of mine, I have 4 kids, so one of my sons, he was at college, and I knew he was in trouble, and I called the dean because I couldn't reach him. And The dean says, is your child over 18? I says, yes. He says, well, he's an adult now. And I said, so if something's wrong with my child, you're not going to go check on him. I'm asking you to send someone to go check on him. And he says, he's over 18. If he needs help, he'll come seek it out. I said, so unless my son is dead, you're not going to call me. Is that correct? He says, that's correct. And this is from a Massachusetts college that my son was in.
Oh,
and
God.
I distinctly remember that day, that conversation. And that dean was very much really stating how schools really are. They're not going to give you information because when you go into college, there's a form that kids can choose to sign, and it's given to them right at orientation, and it says whether or not your parents have access to any information. And almost every kid signs because they don't really know. You know,
right?
And it says that your parents are out of the loop. That's it now. And
right.
And you know, even parents that say, "Well, I'm paying the bill or everything," and it's sort of like if that paper's signed, there's nothing you can do about it. And I think that's a serious problem, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of my biggest complaints when I first found that out that was happening because. You know, I had three kids, and my son Dan went to a school in Vermont, and I actually did the same thing because I was worried about
mm-hmm.
if he was living in a drug-free dorm, but his
right.
voice sounded like he had been drinking, and I was frightened because when he drinks, he just goes crazy. I mean, he could end up dead, the things he does.
Right.
I needed someone to check him. Could you just go over there, please? No.
Same thing I asked. Just go over there.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Could you just take 10 minutes? Could you check on? No, they don't do it. They don't want to be responsible.
Right.
You know, it's the school rules, and they don't want to do it. And how can you then go? How could, if that, he happened to be fine. I was paranoid. But, if he wasn't, he wouldn't have the capability of going and asking for help because he was
right.
He'd be too drunk. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I'm out of the college world now, but I agree with you. You know, parents should have some say. That's for sure.
Well, you know, I think I think that almost anyone should have the right to be able to ask about anyone else. You're in healthcare and I as well. You know, I've been in healthcare for 45 years. And the deal is these darn papers that they get you to sign, it's almost like, you know, you have no idea what you're really signing, but you're signing your life away so that nobody can actually help you outside of the people that you think that you're giving power to. You're actually giving the power to the doctor and the nurse, and that's it. Other than that, you're pretty well screwed, for lack of a better word, because you're not going to get any help from anyone or anything else to support you if you have an issue, right?
I know it. That's exactly right. So it's just, I don't know what can be done about that. I mean, there's so many issues with kids these days. I don't remember
right.
this when I was younger. I guess we're around the same age. I don't remember all of this craziness except when, you know, pot started to become big in the 60s. And, you know, I think
right.
that one day Gino looked at me and he said, you know what? I now believe marijuana is a gateway drug for me. And he had never
uh-huh.
said that before. So for him it was. You know, he
mm-hmm.
smoked a lot of pot. I knew he smoked pot. And I kind of let go of that because I'm not against pot too much. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if he smoked a joint, what can I do? That's okay. I got to let it go. But when he said that, he moved on from that, you know, the purpose that he loved, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a disease. Do you feel it's a disease?
I think that it is something in our body that says, this is what I need right now. So I don't think that I'm the type of person who doesn't give labels, because then it gives the power to people who want to fix it. So, in other words, I'm not going to say it's a disease, because then the doctors say, well, we fix diseases. Or I don't want to say it's a mental health issue, because then the psychiatrist says, we'll fix it. We got a drug for it. You know what I mean? And then when they have these other drugs and the other fix it, it isn't fixing the real core. And sometimes the core is they need to feel safe in the world. I don't think they feel safe in the world, you know? My family members and my sons will say that. They didn't feel safe at times. And I think the idea, even some of the badass people that were, you know, at some of the rehabs, they were like, it's not safe, man. We got to protect. We got to juke up. We got to this, that, or the other. So I think sometimes the idea that is it a disease? Is it not? I think that safety comes within our body, being able to be okay with whatever's going on, and being able to say, I need help, is really can take a zillion different shades of experiences in our lives. So I try to say, you know what, I recognize it, I get it, and I think we have to do the best we can. I think that's what you did with your book. Again, the book is Hat Tricks from Heaven, and it's your son Gino's story. And I think really what you did is you went three shades around. You talked, you went, you showed up, you observed, you were present, you brought things up, and you walked the walk with him. And I think when that's very important, is that we walk the walk with them through jail, through rehab, through going to save them, through going to help them, because that's really what the purpose is walking the walk with them, I think is the most important.
Yeah.
And that's what you did.
Yeah, that's what I did. I felt like I made some mistakes along the way, but it was out of love. You know, I just could not stand seeing him sick. We would try to get him into a Suboxone clinic, and just the waiting line was 3 months.
And but really, you showed up. But see, really, even though we see, I think this is really important, and I found this out, you know, believe me, I've been down this road so many times, is that when even if we show up, it doesn't matter that we've, in some people's eyes, we've rescued or saved or done things good or bad or whatever, because I don't use labels at all. I think when we show up, we're just saying, I'm here. And then just exactly what you said, you know, that you still did it from love, because yes, you were there. And I think that's most important. Even if, you know, someone is yelling or screaming or fighting or whatever, it doesn't matter. You're standing there. If someone says, you know, I'm checking out, but you're standing there. It's just about being present. And you did it every single step of the way. And I think that's what you and I are both saying is about when kids have issues, don't sidestep and push them out the door and never want to see them again, is walk with them. And that's what you did, is you walked with them so you could share that story, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, some people, I'm sure, are saying, why are you telling, you know, your story of your family? But I don't look at it like that. I mean, probably the same thing is going on in so many of their homes. They just don't want to talk about it.
Right.
I'm just the person who just really need to get it out in the air. And, you know, as a society, let's help each other. Let's help our neighbors. Let's help our world and lead to eventual, you know, stability with a lot of these kids that just need some help, you know, just need some guidance, you know. It doesn't always have to be an addiction, you know. So.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is they just keep getting so stuck in the ideas that you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that, because everybody's so full of judgment these days, don't you think?
Oh, God, yes. Everybody judges. Absolutely.
I mean, they want to wag the finger at you, right?
Yeah. You weren't a good mother, but I didn't, in my community, I'm sure there are some people who don't believe that we were probably good parents, but, you know,
right.
We were. We walked our walk. We worked. We worked hard. We brought
mm-hmm.
our kids up. You know, we loved them very
right.
much. We didn't do anything to hurt them. You know, what happened because of just circumstances, different circumstances.
That's it.
That's
it.
Yeah.
You know, when you think back on the time of the Cowboys and Indians, when that one guy shot another guy, you know, I thought of this last night. I was watching this show. It says, Who Do You Think You Are? Where they look back at their ancestors and stuff, you know, and their lineage. And they're reading all these court reports or news reports or paper articles about their ancestors. And they say, oh, how terrible they were. Well, it really wasn't. That was what the time was going on. Do you know what I'm saying? It's sort of like, how could they do that? That was awful. Why did so-and-so kill so-and-so? Well, that you should never kill anybody. Well, at that time, it was survival. That's what they did. So now I'm not saying that drugs are survival, but what I'm saying is that they're present out there right now, and it's just how you walk through this now. You know what I mean?
Right.
In other words, it's what's presented, and how can we do the best we can? I don't think we can change history. I don't think we can change a lot of things that are occurring, but we can do the best we can with what we have and just keep walking through it, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that we need more awareness. I wasn't conscious of the fact that my kids were being abused. I didn't know. I had nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with it. I had let them off and going back to nursing school, and my mother babysat. And my brother was
right.
there. He was the one who did it. And, you know, my daughter pressed charges, and he went to jail because
mm-hmm.
she started having flashbacks. And then she was 17, and she said, and she's a social worker now, surprisingly. And she just said, he got to get off the street. He did this to me.
Yeah.
He's going to do it to somebody else. So at 17, she was very powerful and brave to do that. And I'm proud of her, but where was I? Where was my mind? I kept saying, well, you know, because he actually affected a lot of members of my family, the kids. So where were all we, you know, like sometimes it happened
mm-hmm.
at family parties. We
right.
never, it wasn't in our consciousness that we would have a family
yes.
member do that. That's all I can say, you know, so
yeah.
I don't feel guilty anymore about it. I have let that go, but I feel bad
mm-hmm.
that my kids have had to go through that and through counseling and everything else to even feel me normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the abuse was so traumatic. Very
yeah,
traumatic.
And it's just something that, you know, as we say, we keep bringing up the awareness. We keep speaking up about what's going on, what's been happening in our family, and stop having such pretty houses and adorning them with all kinds of fluff, you know? I mean, I think we are so afraid to say we hurt, we have pain, this is something that happened, and then we walk into our house, and we've got a grand old, you know, big old, you know, Friday afternoon party at our house that goes on till the next day. You know, and we think, you know, what are we really doing? Are we really speaking truth? Are we creating an illusion of our life? So I think really about speaking about our truth, what's going on, is really the key, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely, I agree. Yeah, it's a difficult world.
But yeah, those who want to have something to say about it, I think those are the ones sometimes we don't want to ever judge, and we just say, I hear you, and then just move on, because many times people will come back 10, 20 years later and say, you know what, sorry, I heard you had a story before, can I tell you mine? And eventually they open up too, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. I've experienced that myself several times. So, yeah, it's a tough world we're living in now.
It sure is. You know, yeah. Kate, in closing, how do you think that, I mean, us being in healthcare and we turn around and we say that their physical pains is sometimes how they got started. It's just sometimes I know for myself, I had to step out of the professions because I would see them doing things and I would say, you know what, in my right mind, I don't think that that's the best choice. And I couldn't go in and take a paycheck to do something that I felt in my heart was wrong. How do you think that people, I think we're seeing it all the time now. In fact, there was another physician that committed suicide the other day. And the idea, I think, that is that people are really coming to a grand climax in healthcare where they're saying, we're having this in our family, we're sensing something, we know something's going on, and maybe these things aren't right. What do you think that people are hitting up against?
I mean, I had knee surgery last year, so I saw what was, you know, I was aware of what was going on. You know, I just could hear patients, other patients, and as far as the drugs going, you know, the girl said, the anesthesiologist said to me, you know, they'll give you a prescription for pain when you go home. And I said, what if I was an addict? And she said, oh, but you're not, so
right,
you get your amount. Well, how does she know I'm not?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Or how, like, does she know that you don't have one in your house?
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know,
what they're doing here now is they're hiring recovery coaches and putting them in the emergency rooms for people that have, let's say, overdosed or come in really drunk. There's a coach there that is in recovery, and they try mm-hmm. to convince them to get help. Don't just leave. Get some help.
Right.
I'll help you get into a rehab now. So I think that's progress. That's, you know, that's a good change.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it's a tough topic to say, where's the fine line between working with your pain of being physical or mental and being able to say, hey, I'm really in trouble. And I think that fine line is something only you can define, but also, too, it's something that needs to be spoken about more often. And that's really what we're talking about today, yes?
Exactly, exactly.
Yep. Well, Kate, it was such a pleasure to have you with us today. Could you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Sure. It's my name, www.kategenovese.com. Yeah.
And I think it's really great to note that they're able to reach out and to be able to talk to you, because a lot of times people will say, I wrote a book and I kind of hide. You know, when I think a lot of times people are really reaching out and it's about sharing the stories. And I think that's so vitally important. So thank you so much for sharing, Genos.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Pleasure talking to you.
If you'd like to find out more information about Kate Genovese, and again, the book is Hat Tricks from Heaven, please do click on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to her link. And it really is addiction and drugs, alcohol, all the same. The issue is, are we struggling? Are we finding that there's something coming up or rising up on the inside of us that really needs to come out? Or is there something going on around us that we really need to pay attention to, stop up and say, put up my hand? No, I'm not going to dance that dance anymore. Please do ask for help. Please do ask for support. You're able to find on the bottom of today's show page Kate's link. You can be able to contact her and be able to share your story. Also, my link is on the bottom of today's show page. If you just need someone to talk to, if you need to have support and guidance, if you need help in finding ways to help others, please do give me a call, contact us. Please do reach out, check out the website, and send me a note on the Contact Us page. Really step up, be able to get out there, be able to help others, do the best you can. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Thank you so much for joining us today. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.